Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Nip Tuck Coach Radio, your cosmetic surgery connection. Join cosmetic surgery Nip Tuck Coach, beauty expert, and author of Safety First, A Consumer Guide to Cosmetic Surgery, Michelle Garber, your host of the Nip Tuck Radio Show. Michelle's goal is to empower listeners and help them make safe cosmetic surgery procedure choices. This fun and lively show explores the world of beauty and cosmetic surgery and features expert guests on a variety of topics. No hype. Your host, Michelle Garber, is here today to help you navigate the confusing world of cosmetic surgery.
Hi, everyone. This is Michelle Garber, and welcome to another week of Nip Tuck Coach Radio. I'm Michelle Garber, your host, and we are broadcasting live this morning from San Francisco. If you don't know me, I'm founder of Nip Tuck Coach, an independent cosmetic surgery consultancy, helping you navigate through the confusing world of cosmetic procedures and surgery by keeping you safe and well-informed so that not only do you get a great result, but you get the best result. And to create more consumer awareness for safe cosmetic and plastic surgery procedures, I've written a comprehensive little guide called Safety First, the 10 Golden Rules for Safe Cosmetic Surgery, which you can download for free at my website at niptuckcoach.com. Today we're going to be talking with Beverly Hills plastic surgeon, Dr. Robin Yuan. Hi, Dr. Yuan. Thank you for joining us. Are you there?
Hi, Michelle. Thank you for inviting me.
Dr. Yuan earned his MD from Harvard Medical School and completed a plastic surgery resident at the University of Miami Jackson Memorial Hospital, and he is certified by the American Board of Plastic Surgery. He's well known for his anatomic and natural approach to facial rejuvenation, breast enhancement, augmentation, reconstruction, and body contouring that incorporates his philosophy of the fifth dimension. He is the author of popular books, Cheer Up, You're Only Half Dead, Reflections of Midlife, Behind the Mask, Beneath the Glitter, The Deeper Truths About Safe, Smart Cosmetic Surgery, and The Skinny on Marriage, A Plastic Surgeon's Practical Guide. You've written quite a few books on the subject of plastic surgery, and I've read the one, The Mask Behind the Glitter. And it's a refreshing philosophy of how you interact with your patients. And I just want to read the back cover. Behind the Mask, Beneath the Glitter is an intimate and entertaining work that lays bare Dr. Yuan's contrarian philosophy regarding cosmetic surgery. Dr. Yuan goes inside the mind and behind the scenes of his cosmetic practice to reveal important concepts and misconceptions that drive this popular feel. Contrarian philosophy.
Yes.
Well, you want to shed some light on that?
Well, the first contrarian view is that cosmetic surgery is unnecessary, and that's actually the title of my first chapter. So whenever I tell that to patients, which I do tell them, they're always surprised, but they always sort of nod in approval. Strangers, when they hear it, think I'm kind of cutting my own throat, so to speak, because they say, well, plastic surgeons should always, advise people to have plastic surgery. And I say, well, cosmetic surgery is unnecessary. So that's sort of the first contrarian sort of point of view. And from that, a lot of other contrarian concepts flow from that.
So where did this contrarian philosophy come from? How did you arrive at your philosophy towards cosmetic surgery?
I think it's a multitude of factors. One is being the type of person that I am, always being inquisitive and challenging things, and that might come from my Harvard background, not taking things on face value. So, and looking for things that are either not so obvious or going against the trend to find sort of little pearls of knowledge or truth. So that's sort of the basic personality I have. But more practically speaking, I think it started when I was entering my practice, and I did quite a lot of reconstructive surgery. I ran a craniofacial clinic. I started a craniofacial clinic. I was very involved in breast reconstruction. Did a lot of orthopedic spine, body, wound reconstructions. And then when I started to see more cosmetic patients, I became a little bit uncertain about what to do, because in reconstruction, you can basically operate on some and not even talk to them. You look at a problem, you say, well, I know how to solve this problem. I know the traditional approaches to this this situation. But in cosmetic surgery, especially in Beverly Hills where there's high expectations, I wasn't always sure of what to do, and mainly it was because when I looked at the variety of patients coming through the door, and looked at them as individuals, they would have very sort of they would have misconceptions about what I should be doing. They would ask me, like, what do you think I should do? And I'm looking at them like normal people. I said, there's nothing wrong with you. And so this sort of difficulty in making choices from my own point of view in cosmetic surgery versus reconstruction was a factor. And then as I went further and saw more patients, all the misconceptions became much clearer. Patients would come in asking certain questions that told me that there's sort of a disconnect. They would say, like, well, what am I going to look like after a facelift? And I said, well, that's not the way I operate. I don't just take a facelift procedure off the shelf and give it to you, and that's the way you look. It's trying to customize the procedure for you. But they had this idea that was sort of perpetuated by either other surgeons or what was in the media. So I thought that there was, some truth that weren't being revealed to them. Those are some of the factors that went into writing the book in the sort of contrarian view. The other thing was with the understanding that cosmetic surgery is elective and no one has to go through it, that you should have a very high success rate. And then as you look at patients walking around Beverly Hills or pictures of complications, that, you know, patients were being, they were injured or they didn't get good results and they were unhappy, they were disappointed, and I was trying to figure out why that was.
Well, that's all very interesting, because I think that the gap is getting greater between patient and surgeon. I know that all too often I hear from clients that contact me that the surgeon did not really spend the necessary time explaining the procedures or asking questions about what does the patient want. And even I've done some secret shopping myself with surgeons, and I've been told things like, you'll have beautiful results, this is an easy case, I know what you need. I mean, how does the surgeon really know you'll have beautiful results, or that they really know what you need? Or, I mean, nothing is guaranteed. And that's why I think it's very interesting that your philosophy is more patient-centered. I recently got an email from someone that went for a cosmetic consultation, I think at a dermatologist, and actually it was quite a disturbing email. And she never saw the doctor. All she said was she was being upsold about procedures. She had no idea what they were. And she felt like she was at a hair salon and that she was getting her hair cut, and not that she was consulting about her face. And this is a problem. And it's the problem seems to be just getting larger and larger, because, as we know, cosmetic surgery is a very lucrative business. It's become very competitive, and consumers really don't understand what they're getting into or even understand some of the differences of the procedures.
Well, that's all that is very true, and you mentioned factors that that I address in the book, and for that very reason, is I think that patients do get injured, maybe not physically, but certainly emotionally, if they don't have a good result. Now, we all have complications, but I think the goal is to reduce the complications in the way that we can, and mainly by the communication and preoperative consultation process, which I think, as you noted, is very curtailed, and there are shortcut things that the doctors do, and some of it is driven by by the business aspect. I think that that factor of putting business at the forefront and medicine sort of in the rear is backwards, but it is what happens practically. I too just got off the phone with a patient from Canada who was thinking about flying down for a consultation, and I said, "Well, why are you coming to LA all the way from Canada?" He said, "Well, you know, she had talked to other doctors up here, and one of them, they don't even talk to the patients until the day of surgery. Another one spent just 30 minutes and then turned her over to a consultant. And so I don't have any consultants. I've all my career have been sort of one-on-one with patients. I don't really like and don't want anyone in between my patients and myself. And I think that's where a lot of miscommunication and trouble begins is when you don't have the doctor speaking directly to the patient. And so I think you're very astute in sort of being aware of that.
So when you consult with your patients, how do you manage their expectations? Because I know this is something that I think is one of the downfalls of plastic surgeons and patient communications is their expectations and managing them, because what they may view as a bad result may not be a bad result, but they had expectations before they went in that wasn't discussed. So there, again, there's another gap, I think, with that.
Right. There's tremendous gaps, and that's why I spend so much time with patients, because you have to inform them, you have to educate them, and you have to communicate and be on the same page with them. In terms of managing expectations, I think from the get-go, when I tell them that cosmetic surgery is unnecessary, that puts them in a different frame of mind. Because what happens, I think, in general, in this field, is that everything is geared to getting the patients to do a certain procedure, to get them through into the operating room. You know, there are companies, direct-to-consumer marketing, trying to get patients to do certain procedures. You know, the doctors obviously want to operate on you. The patients want the procedure. The surgery center wants to make, you know, keep their operating room busy. So everybody is geared to doing something on a patient, and sometimes there needs to be, you know, sort of a break applied to this process. And so, you know, I guess it's the strategy or that I use when I try to set up barriers for patients that they have to, you know, sort of surmount. When I went to Harvard Medical School, I remember one mentor said that, you know, if you don't want complications, don't bring him to the operating room, because that's where complications happen. You know, you can't get a bad result if you never go to the operating room. So this sort of concept of, you know, you try to keep the patient out of the operating room, and if they can't stay out of the operating room, if they need something or want something, or, you know, you can't, you know, make them happy any other way, then that's when they go into the operating room. So, you know, it's not that I discourage them, but I certainly bring up, you know, the side effects, the complications, the failures, you know, the missing the mark in terms of the end result. And I never sort of promised them a great result. You know, you hope for that, and they'll understand that as you go through the process and you're very careful about planning things, that your success rate should be pretty high. But I think the typical approach is for consultants and doctors and nurses to say, "Oh, you look great, and this, you know, doctor's terrific, and everybody's happy," and sort of paint this picture of, you know, your expectations are easily met. So in that way, I'm a little bit contrarian.
Well, that's really hard to predict.
Everything is hard to predict, and I think that's, you know, being very, you know, trying to be very truthful to patients. You know, you can't promise them anything. You know, you can't say, "Well, this is a painless procedure, or this is an easy procedure, or you'll have no problems, you'll look fantastic." All these things are geared to, I think, getting the patients into the operating room or into the procedure room. And so this ease of entry into this magical world is a potential problem. And it's an evolution that's occurred you know, over the last couple of decades, you know, in the old days, days of old Hollywood, only the rich and famous got cosmetic surgery, or the people in front of the public, you know, actors and whatnot. But nowadays, plastic surgery is marketed to the masses. Anybody can get it. You can put on a credit card, get credit through any of these numbers of cosmetic surgery credit companies. So there's sort of an ease of the process. Even I was on Extreme Makeover a decade ago, and you know, had all these fantastic transformations, and everybody thought, you know, like, you know, just go in and, you know, half an hour later you come out fabulous. And so there's a lot of misconceptions about what you have to go through.
I know there is.
Yeah.
You also mentioned in your book, you say what we plastic surgeons think is not necessarily as important as what our patients think. And I think that's a little contrarian too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think some of the things that you mentioned about doctors, how they communicate or don't communicate with patients come from what I call paternalistic medicine, which is the traditional approach to the practice of medicine, where a patient comes into a room and, you know, they say, I have a cough or I have a pain or something, and the doctor will proclaim something. You know, you need to get this x-ray, you need to take this medicine, you know, you need this surgery. And the patient just sort of listens and does what the doctor says. And in cosmetic surgery, that is still true, probably less so than in the past. I mean, I was trained by a surgeon who was very much like that. You know, the less the patient said anything, the happier he was, and he just, you know, did what he thought was the appropriate thing. But as the field has evolved, I think there is more of a sense that you have to work with the patient and see things through their eyes and customize procedures, and that's what I try to do. I call that collaborative medicine. It's not paternalistic. I don't presume to know anything about what the patient wants, what will make them happy. And so I try very hard in the consultations to have them delineate and voice what they want, because, you know, as I tell them, if you don't know what will make you happy, I have no idea what to do. And sometimes,
well, isn't that very common, though, that a patient will come in and not know exactly what they want? Like they have an idea, well, I want to look rejuvenated, or I want to look younger, but they don't understand exactly how they're going to get there.
Absolutely. And then they relinquish themselves in the decision-making process to the doctor, because then the doctor will say, oh, you need this or that, you know, and you go to a dermatologist, and they'll say, oh, you need a fill, you need this laser procedure. You go to an ENT doctor, he'll say something. You go to a plastician, you know, so everybody's got an opinion. But I look at them as a blank canvas walking in my office, and I tell them, well, if you don't know, I can't do anything. I'm not going to operate on you because I have no idea what's going to make you happy. And I'll pose the question, say, to a woman, I'll say, well, would you like to be a man? And, of course, they'll say no. And I say, well, I can make you into a man. I can make you look like a man. Is that what you want? You know. So then they sort of understand that, oh, it doesn't have anything to do with what I think. It has to do with what they want. And then it's, you know, it's sometimes a long, arduous process to get them to think about, be more creative and constructive about what they want. And they'll come in speaking in emotional terms. They'll say, you know, I want to look better. I want to look more, rejuvenated. I want to look younger. And I say, I don't have an operation. I never learned the rejuvenation procedure in school. I don't have a younger operation for you. You know, you have to decide on what it is that will make you look a certain way that makes you feel younger. So that's all anatomy. So I talk about how it's really all about anatomy in my book, and you have to start defining the anatomy or defining the emotional terms in terms of anatomy. And that's a very tricky thing, because we all have misconceptions about the way we look and how you interpret that. A common thing is if a patient comes in and she has, you know, eyebrows that look a little low. And I say, I look tired, and I want to look brighter and look more, you know, younger, and the typical reaction would be, oh, you need a brow lift. But if you look at their old photos, and you look at a lot of kids, babies, and teenagers, their brows are fairly low. You know, they never had high eyebrows, but we interpret that as aging or tiredness or sagging, and then you end up getting an operation. So unless you sort of talk about this with patients, examine things, analyze things, look at old photos, and discuss things, you can very easily be led down the wrong path.
So do you think that there's a difference in the perceptions of the way women looked, let's say, in the, you know, 60s or 70s or even earlier than that, than today?
Well,
you mentioned the eyebrows, and you know, and if you look at the media and you look at magazines and you look at celebrities, there's a common thread there on what people consider to be youthful looking.
Yeah, I think there is sort of a art reflects, you know, real life, and life reflects art type of thing, where you know, if you have attractive celebrities or actors or whomever models have, say, for instance, high cheekbones or strong chins, or, you know, arched eyebrows, you know, whatever the features are, that may get perpetuated within society, and then patients will ask about those features and want those features, and then so then you have a lot of the patients looking a certain way. But I think that can also get carried out to absurdity, where, you know, in the end, everybody looks the same. You know, they all have these features, which can be interpreted as youth, but may not be interpreted as that individual patient. And so one thing I try to do is to individualize procedure. You have to really analyze the patient and decide what characteristics, what facial features really define them. Because if you lose that, you could lose their identity. And that takes, you know, some patients are not aware of that. You'll say, look at your eyes were always sort of downward slanted. Your eyebrows were always a little bit, you know, low, and that's who you are. If you, you know, quote, corrected that or changed that, you won't look like you. So it takes a long analytical process to dissect out the anatomical features that should or shouldn't be corrected. The other thing is that some patients, and you have to ask them this, some patients never liked the way they looked previously, and some people do like the way they looked when they were young. So again, you have to look at the anatomical features, and not just look at them at the present state. You have to look at the history and how they aged and what their baseline is and whether or not they liked or didn't like certain features of their face. You can't make an automatic judgment and say you need these procedures or this thing changed just because I feel that's, you know, that means beauty or youth.
You know, I want to talk a minute for about celebrities. You know, mm-hmm. People are always commenting on how celebrities look.
Yeah.
And do you think that it's that they choose sometimes to look the way they look? Because you do treat a lot of celebrities. And do they have a warped sense of what looks good? Especially
the
in Beverly Hills?
The celebrities are the patients. Who
well, the celebrities who are patients. Do you, the ones?
Well, I mean, the only thing I can say about celebrities one is that they don't look the way they look when you see them in public or, you know, in magazines. I've seen the celebrities and they're raw, and you know, some of them may be still very attractive, but they don't look like the perfect you know, features that they seem to have when they're presented in a magazine or on a news program. So you have to color your expectations. You have to color what you see and what you want to emulate by the fact that they don't even look like themselves. The other thing is I tend not to make judgments about celebrities in terms of they look like or whether or not if they had surgery, if it was good or bad, because it's a very personal, individual decision. I don't for instance, if there was a celebrity that had a certain procedure done, and you know, people make comments about, you know, whether or not it looks good or bad, I try to reserve judgment because you don't know what that conversation was. Now, it may be that she's very unhappy about something and she shouldn't have gotten what she had, but it could also be that, yes, they have a certain, you know, point of view in terms of what makes them happy or what makes them attractive. And they're like ordinary people to some extent. I mean, they can also have dysfunctional and warped sense of what they look like and who they are, and maybe even exaggerated. But I tried to reserve that judgment. For instance, I bring up Michael Jackson as a point of conversation because I say I'll tell patients it really doesn't matter what Michael Jackson looks like. You know, it matters whether or not whatever procedure done to him was safe and whether or not you know, was done, you know, appropriately. But if he wanted to look like a woman, if he wanted to look like, you know, Diana Ross, if he wanted to look like whatever, that's between him and his own soul. You know, I'm not going to make judgments on that. There are plenty of patients, people who, as I say, start out as women and want to be men or vice versa. I'm not going to make judgments on that. Obviously, if they're being led down a certain path inappropriately, then that might be an issue. But, you know, everybody is individual. Everybody has features that they like or don't like, and that's the whole point of the consultation, is be careful about the things that you want to change and make sure that you have the right person to make those decisions with you.
So what factors do you believe are important when choosing a plastic surgeon? We have about 3 minutes left.
3 minutes. Okay. Assuming... Well, I think in terms of choosing a plastic surgeon, my advice usually is if a patient has a good doctor that they're attached to, and particularly women with their gynecologist, that you should ask your gynecologist, because every woman who has a procedure done will end up in her gynecologist's office. Like my main source of patients, or my referral source, is a gynecologist. They know who's doing good work. They know who's doing, you know, whose patient ends up in the hospital in the emergency room, because all those patients will come back to their office at some point. So that's one thing. You know, instead of going, you know, necessarily on a search engine, you know, ask your doctor. You know, board certification is important, but I think also the philosophy. You have to be in sync with that doctor's philosophy. It's almost like getting married to that person, and that's why I wrote my other book about marriage. There's certain elements that are common in doctor-patient and spouse relationships. And you should be as much in sync with that philosophical approach to what he does.
So I think a good question then to ask the surgeon is, what is your philosophical approach?
Most of them have no idea what you're talking about, because we don't think of that. That's why I wrote about it. We do have a philosophical approach, and I think it's helped me tremendously. And when a patient identifies with that and gets it, it's like nirvana. It's like you both understand what your goals are and how you make decisions. Otherwise, it's sort of a guessing game. You know, it's sort of like operating on patients who speak a foreign language, and you're trying to figure out what to do, and you can't even communicate. You know, I think that's a problem, and can be a mistake, and it happens a lot. Because doctors in America sometimes love foreign patients. You know, they come in with cash, but they don't speak the same language. So.
And that's probably, you know, a good question to ask your doctor. And I'm wondering what type of answer you would actually get, because typically patients don't ask their doctor what their philosophical approach to surgery is.
Right. I think if you spend enough time with probing questions, I mean, the other thing is to ask whatever questions on your mind. You know, don't just surrender yourself to the doctor. You know, challenge him, and then you'll see how he approaches things. Like as you mentioned, there are some offices that will try to upsell you, and so that philosophical approach is to gain as much revenue as possible. You know, it may not be to educate you. It may not be to, you know, do things that are less invasive, more comprehensive or less comprehensive. May not be anatomically based. It's more just sort of revenue based. And that's
right.
A philosophical approach. I mean, a lot of doctors have, you know, I don't want to be too doctor bashing, but, you know, this field
right.
is a setup for, you know, philosophical approach of revenue enhancement.
Right, right, it is. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Yuan. We've had a great discussion. And if listeners would like to get in touch with Dr. Yuan, you can get in touch with him through his email, which is Robin, Y-U-A-N-M-D, at AOL.com. And you can order his books on Amazon, correct?
Correct. Well, there's different outlets, but Amazon is certainly one of the
Amazon's noticeable. A good outlet. Right. And thank you for listening to Nip Tuck Coach Radio. If you missed any episodes, they are available for download on iTunes or at blogtalkradio.com. And please visit us on Facebook and Twitter, hashtag Nip Tuck Coach and hashtag Safe Cosmetic Surgery and hashtag Safety First. And if you'd like a copy of my ebook, please visit niptuckcoach.com. And join us next week for an interesting topic on designer vaginas. Have a beautiful weekend. Thank you for listening. Bye for now.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Nip Tuck Coach Radio. Join us next week for another exciting program about the world of cosmetic surgery and beauty. To learn more about Michelle Garber, go to www.niptuckcoach.com. To consult with Michelle directly, call 415-494-7211.